28 of Triton Cast, we'll introduce you to new women's volleyball head coach Spencer McLaughlin. He takes us inside building a program from the ground up. From evaluating talent to hiring a coaching staff, from recruiting to scheduling, we'll learn how this first-time head coach is using a process-driven approach to building a sustainable winner. The Hawaii native reflects on his playing career and winning a national championship at Stanford. New women's volleyball head coach Spencer McLaughlin is in the Triton Spotlight this week on Triton Cast. Welcome to episode 128 of Triton Cast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. I'm Jeff Turiel. Whether you found us on UCSDTritons.com or your favorite podcast platform, thanks so much for joining us this week and making us a part of your day. Now, before we get to this week's Triton Spotlight, let's go around campus. How about the UC San Diego baseball team? Making their Division I postseason debut, the Tritons battled back through the elimination bracket with three straight wins to reach the title game. Staying on the diamond, congrats to softball left fielder Sam Womack. She was recognized for her work in the classroom by being named to the CSC Academic All-District Team. And fall sports will be here before we know it. The 2026 women's soccer schedule is on UCSDTritons.com. Jonesy's squad will face a challenging slate in their final Big West campaign, and season tickets go on sale in mid-June. Now it's on to our Triton Spotlight. Spencer McLaughlin grew up around sports. His father, Chris, was a volleyball and basketball coaching legend in Hawaii. In this week's conversation, Spencer reflects on that, talks about his vision for the Tritons, and so much more. All right, Spencer, you've been in La Jolla for several months now. How has the spring gone with your new team?
Spring has gone really well. We just finished last week. We had a scrimmage out at Riverside and maybe 2 weeks ago. And then this last week, we did a bunch of practices on the beach to kind of cap off the spring season with a little bit of fun and a little bit of change of scenery for the girls. It was a really good. So we had winter quarter and spring quarter, and the goal was for the girls to learn and just come in with a open mindset, willing to kind of maybe change some things that they've been taught and maybe just add on to some things. But learning was the core value, I would say, of the spring. And we had most of our like spring season ending meetings today and a few more tomorrow, but they've all been great. The girls have learned so much. They've come in with the right mindset, and I was really proud of the gains that we made. Makes me excited for the fall, to be honest. We've got 8 or 9 more coming in into the fold, and I think we've laid a really good foundation this spring. So I'm excited to see how the upperclassmen are going to bring these freshmen and transfers into the fold and kind of teach them the ways that they've learned so quickly.
Yeah, you talk about building that foundation. So for you as a new head coach, where does it start in terms of culture and roster building and building your coaching staff? How do you prioritize those things, and how did all of those things come together, or how are they coming together?
Yeah, that's a great question, because as a first-time head coach, I had no idea. What comes first, getting the players, getting the culture, getting my staff, me, myself, learning everything there is to learn about UC San Diego, and I think the order of operations that I went in terms of just my time spent was probably like 50% was on building the staff. And then probably like 30% was on learning everything there is to learn about UC San Diego. And then the last 20% was on the current roster. And to me, like as a new head coach, it was completely backwards. I would have thought, hey, the players are the first priority. Let's get them dialed. Let's get the culture in line. But for me, I'm like, I want to build a staff that's going to be around for a long time. And so I spent a lot of time, I don't know how many calls I made for each staff member, interviews, calling their former employers and, doing my due diligence. And I'm really happy that it did, because I'm so proud of the staff, and it has allowed me freedom to delegate. And I think the best bosses are not micromanagers. And I could be a micromanager if I didn't trust their competence. And they are incredible coaches, all three of them. So that was my kind of order of operations. My wife kind of made fun of me because I got hired maybe 2 months before the UCLA head coach, and he had his staff maybe a month and a half before mine. She's like, what's taking you so long? And I was like, look, it's really important to me, and I'm really proud of what we did. And then the next part was learning everything there is to learn. I think as a head coach, that has also been a new discovery for me, is like being the endpoint for every decision. And in order to make a good decision, I need to understand every aspect of what goes into that decision. So if we're talking admissions, okay, let's learn everything that there is to learn. Okay, if we're talking about housing, if we're talking about all the colleges, you know, the academic side, which majors, right? Like I'm still learning, and it's great because, you know, I have these recruits and they come on visits and they ask me questions, and I'm like, I'm just honest. I'm like, you know what? I don't know. But let's find out. And so that's helped me learn too. So that's kind of been my philosophy. And I think it's played out really well for the long term, you know. And that's what, you know, I want to be here for a long time. So, and I don't want to surround myself with great people. So that's what I did. And yeah, I'm excited to get to work with them every day.
When you're building a program, how do you keep the long term, the big picture in focus so that, of course, everybody wants to win every match right off the bat, right? But how do you kind of keep that big picture in mind when you're going through the process of hiring a staff and recruiting players and those kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it starts with you know, keeping expectations low for this season. You know, there's so many traps you can fall into of like, okay, I need to get X amount of wins. We need to get X amount of players on the, you know, postseason awards. And, you know, we can't really control those things. So for me, it's like, okay, let's start with, can we upgrade in recruiting in one or two positions this year? Okay, can we upgrade our culture in, you know, one or two? I don't even know how to measure that, but can it just be a little bit healthier? You know, like culture is kind of like, you know it when you see it, like a good one, you know, or a bad one, but it is hard to measure. But like, can we make it a stronger, more productive, and more like a joyful, like I want the girls wanting to come into the gym. Like, can we accomplish that? And then the wins are going to follow, and hopefully we get, you know, to double digit wins like that. I think that would be a realistic, maybe on the low side, expectation. So I'm not, you know, setting myself up for failure by, you know, oh, we've got to win the Big West year one. Like, if we win it, great, but I can't control that. So I'm going to focus on the things I can control. And then year two, all right, we've already upgraded in one or two positions. Can we upgrade in one or two more? With recruiting, can we upgrade our culture just a little bit more so the standards are just a little higher? And I really am process oriented in that, and it's going to be so hard to, as a head coach, to like stay that way when the wins and losses are now like attached to my name. You know, I think that's gonna be a first, it's going to be a real test, you know, because I am a competitive person, and, you know, I would love to go undefeated. I would love to win the Big West. But I have to remind myself that any incremental gain is good. And I think that's going to help me with the long-term goal of turning this, you know, volleyball team into a top 30 program, which is what Andy and Caitlin, you know, brought me in here to do.
When you arrived in La Jolla and you met with the returning scholar athletes for the first time, what was your message to them?
Oh, that's a great question. I could probably pull up my notes. I wrote them all down. The message was, it was about learning, coming in and kind of forgetting what they've learn, or not forgetting, but like be willing to learn something new. And then the other big message was I told them, hey, look, this whole quarter, so, you know, winter quarter from January to March is a tryout. And I had them all try out, scholarship girls, walk-ons, you know, and everywhere in between. I was like, this is an evaluation period. But I told them, you're not going to get cut or make the team by having one good practice or hitting one good ball. Like it's a really nice long tryout period, and it's going to be how well you're connecting with your teammates and being a good teammate. It's how well you are bringing energy and effort and attitude into the gym every day. And then it's how quickly you're learning the new systems. You know, if I've got a lot to teach, and if we're really slow or maybe stubborn in our ways, that's going to be tough. So, you know, they heard that loud and clear, and we did have to make some changes to the roster. And that was really tough. That was, one of the first times I've, you know, had to do that. And, but it was really cool because, I shouldn't say cool, but it was kind of mind blowing because the girls that I did end up letting go were like so very thankful and appreciative for the opportunity. They were, you know, grateful that they had 3 months to try out, and they were grateful for how much they'd learned in those 3 months. And they were appreciative just of the opportunity. And, you know, I was anticipating like getting a lot of like confrontation, you know, like, oh, you made the bad choice, or, you know, da da da, or what are my stats, or what are her stats, and I should have made it over. But they were all incredible humans, and I really appreciated all of them, and they left a good impact on the program, and so I was blown away at their response, and I wish them the best of luck. A lot of them have found new homes, and I'm, you know, going to be cheering them on. I just, you know, when you take over a new program, you've some hard decisions to make, and those are really hard. And I think everyone might be in a better place, you know, where the girls that are on the team and the girls that are moving on, I think, it kind of works out in weird ways, you know? So anyways, that was the message. I kind of came in and just, it wasn't like a hammer, but I just said the truth and just said, hey, here's what the expectations are. And they all did great. They all like, played, they were great in practice, and, you know, we just had to make some changes. So, yeah.
But it really was a case of everybody, when you arrived, starting with a clean slate, right? So it wasn't based on their stats or video you watched from last season. It was based on, hey, winter quarter, everybody's starting from zero, and everybody's got this, basically the quarter, the 3 months to prove themselves.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. There was a lot of girls who didn't have video I ended up keeping. There were some girls that had video who I thought I was not going to keep. I ended up keeping, and vice versa. So, and it also helps, like, some girls are better in my system a little bit, you know, and so it kind of helped them a little more. And so that was kind of it, you know? And I'm really happy that I did that, and I didn't just go off of video, because there's so much more to the story than just a stat or a, you know, a video clip, a highlight clip, or, you know, so that's why 3 months, it was probably too long. I probably should have done it maybe like a, you know, 1 month tryout or something, but, it was a great opportunity. Yeah. And I think everyone got a fair shot, clean slate. And then now we're down to 9 girls, and we're bringing in another 8 or 9. So yeah, excited about that opportunity too.
What was it like for you as a head coach? I know it's only been a scrimmage so far, but when you were, you know, running the show for the first time against a different opponent, what was that like?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I definitely like got the butterflies. It wasn't like that much different yet. I think it's really going to hit me in August when the lights are on and there's, you know, popcorn in the stands and everything. But because we are so process oriented this spring, and hopefully we will continue to be, it was one of those things where I was kind of challenging the girls, like, hey, I'm not going to call a lot of timeouts. I'm not subbing you out. Like, you're going to, this is an opportunity for you to learn how to battle through. Maybe you're not playing great. Maybe they're picking on you, from the service line. You know, maybe you hit three balls out in a row. You gotta kind of pick yourself up. So I think I called maybe one timeout in four matches or in four sets, that first one. I think one timeout in the next one, we scrimmaged UC Riverside and UC Irvine. So that part was different because obviously I'm going to be a little more, a little more active on the sidelines, and strategic. So that's where it was like a little bit different, but I can tell you, I still got the butterflies, you know, when we were winning the first set and then they came back and I'm like, oh my gosh, are we going to lose this? Are we going to lose, you know, and you get all tight and nervous for them. It's definitely fun. And that's, you know, one of the best parts of the job is just getting that feeling, you know, if I ever stop getting that feeling, then I'll probably go do something else. But it's cool that no one in the stands, you know, just parents and friends and, you know, and you still get that feeling. And it was really funny. So we did end up losing that first set to UC Irvine, and we played really bad, and they played great. And I asked the girls, cause they just didn't play their normal selves. I was like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, coach, we're pretty nervous. And I think it's just because, you know, Irvine, UCSD, like rivalry, you know, they take it seriously. And it was really cool because I was like, look, this is awesome. And I was like, let's look around. And there was maybe, you know, 20 people there. I'm like, you guys are nervous in front of the millions of people watching? And they kind of laughed. And then I gave them some sports psych tools on how to deal with that kind of anxiety or nerves and butterflies, whatever you want to call it. And then we went out and won the next, three sets, and the girls played great, and they more of like what I'm seeing in the gym every day. And so I was super proud of them for that. I'm very excited for August. There's going to be some matches where, you know, I'll be sweating for sure. It's exciting.
Let's go back to when you were hired as head coach. Why was the time right for you to pursue a head coaching position? And most importantly, why was this position right for you?
That's a great question. So the first thing is, like, I was not applying anywhere. I was super proud of the work that I was doing at SC, and that was probably the best season SC has had in 8 years. And we were returning five out of the six starters, and of those five starters, four of them were freshmen or sophomore. So I was going to have like three or four more years with that core group, and so I was stoked. You know, we had a great spot where we were living, and so I was not applying anywhere. So when this opportunity approached, you know, when I got a random text from Andy Fee, and I was like, you know, I'll interview, I'll talk to you, and hear you out, he really sold me. He really sold me on the upside of this institution, on how the athletic department is just growing, and how the school is growing, and the support for athletics is growing, and then obviously the institution being, you know, top 20 in the country, being in La Jolla, like I know I can recruit here. So there was a couple of factors. So number one was Andy. He told me his vision and I believe it and I believe I can execute it. So that was number one. You know, you don't want to go somewhere where your vision and the leadership's vision don't align. And I think ours align very well. Number two, I've always kind of had my eye on this program. So as a player, I played against UCSD every year. As a coach on the men's side, would come here every year. So I've seen the progression of UC San Diego from, you know, playing in REMAC back when it was called REMAC, and, you know, the curtains are dropped and like we're playing a volleyball game and there's like rec basketball going on at the same time, you know, like to, you know, 5 or 6 years later when, you know, it had the renovation and the gym is looking nice and it's still called REMAC, but it's like, oh, this is like a top volleyball gym in not only in California, but I think in the country. And then them going Division One. And then, so I've always kind of been following and I'm like, man, this could be a dream job. And, you know, we played UC San Diego 2 years ago when I was at SC and, you know, I was like, you know, thinking about it. And I saw, you know, some of the great talent, you know, Molly was on the team and, you know, her class was playing. I'm like, man, they got some good girls. Like they just came from D2. They're already getting like such talented players. And so I'd always been following them. And so in the back of my mind, I was like, hey, San Diego would be a great place to raise a family. And now I've got three kids and so the stars kind of aligned. So it was a combination of Andy, of the stars kind of aligning. And then the third one was I did finally feel ready to be a head coach. And I'm not sure that kind of like, are you ready to be a parent? It's like, you don't know what you don't know. And you kind of get thrown into it. And I finally felt like Brad at SC, Brad Keller, had given me enough responsibility, and the coaching staff there, you know, trusted me a lot with the training. But we also did a lot of the stuff, you know, off of the court together, and I think that really prepared me for like coming into this feeling like, okay, I can do it, as opposed to like, whoa, what did I get myself into? So I think there's like a combination of those three things that that made me really excited about this opportunity and also like a believer in what we can do here.
Of course, you played collegiately at Stanford, won a national championship there. Well, first of all, let's just start there. What was that experience like?
winning a national championship? Yeah, it was surreal. Like, again, talk about the stars aligning. Our administration up there saw that we had gotten the number one or number two recruiting class like 3 years in a row. And so they bid on, I think it was my freshman year, you got to bid like 2 or 3 years out. And so they bid for us to host NCAAs. And back then it was just a Final Four. It was a semis and a finals. And so we were always like, so back in 2007, 2008, we're like, okay, 2010 is our year. And when I committed, they won 3 games. They were 3-24.
Wow.
And my freshman year, we were 17-14 or 17-15. And then my sophomore year was kind of like maybe 18-11. We got like marginally better. And then I told the coach in my season exit interview, I said, coach, I think we need some help on the coaching staff. Our volunteer assistant got cancer and had to leave our team. So we had a head coach and one assistant, and that was it. And normally we would have had Al, who was our volunteer for like 20 years. He's a legendary guy. But he got cancer in the middle of the season, so he left the team. So I was like, Coach Costi, I think we need some help. And I think my dad's the guy for the job. And my dad lived in Hawaii at the time. And well, he still does. But, you know, I volunteered him for the volunteer position. And I didn't even ask him. I just said that. And he's a legendary coach in the volleyball and basketball world in Hawaii. And I knew he could have an immediate impact on us and on, you know, the coaching staff and the culture at Stanford. So he came up that next year, and everyone sees the national championship, but we battled like that. That was a tough year. I think we ended up, maybe with 5 or 6 losses, and but we still finished winning the league, and we just peaked at the right time. As soon as we got to playoffs, I think we lost one set in our last 5 games. So it was one of those things, like it was weird. We kind of like crawled to the finish line. Like our last weekend, we almost lost our number one seed, and somehow we ended up keeping it. And then we just didn't look back. It was like, all right, we got the number one seed, and we never looked back. And we had maybe one of the biggest blowouts in the NCAA championship history, with a match that lasted like 1 hour and 15 minutes. And we were just peaking. We were playing on all cylinders. And so that was really cool just to see, like, everyone sees the national championship. Oh, you guys smashed, you know, Penn State in the final. But like the journey, that's kind of what I remember of, like, how bad we were and how we had to figure things out, and that just that senior class I'm so proud of, and the place that we left, Stanford, you know, they ended up going to a finals a couple of years later, and it's just been in a much better spot. So that's something that I think about when we talk about that, my experience up at the farm.
And what was it like playing with your dad on staff? Had you played with under him previously in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. He's a legendary coach. And I knew it, and I was a ball boy for some of his teams. You know, I'm 10 years younger than my brother, but my brother and sister never really wanted him to coach, but I always remember him being like the greatest coach. And I loved listening to all of his stories, talking about how he would manage this personality, or this guy was late. So what was his punishment? Was it going to be benching him, or was it going to be, you know, something else, like make the punishment fit the crime? And he was telling me all these like stories, and, you know, he coached Barack Obama, and like, so, and that's 1979 team that he says was, you know, one of the best teams in Hawaii high school history, and just hearing all these stories. So I'm like, I asked him to coach my second grade basketball team. I'm like,
wow,
no, I want you. You've won 4 state titles in basketball. Yeah, I want that guy to coach my team. And I always called him coach. It was never dad. And then it turned into like Coach Mac and then C-Mac. So everyone calls him C-Mac. And I think people think it's because, you know, Chris C-Mac, but for me, it was Coach Mac. And that's been his nickname ever since. And like my kids call him Papa C, like Papa C-Mac. That was something that I always cherished. So he coached me second grade basketball. He coached me in 8th grade until senior year of club volleyball. We won a national championship together. And I think we also got a silver medal at junior nationals in the club volleyball world. And so he's my role model. He's my John Wooden. So I had no problem. Yeah. I had no problem volunteering him to come up to Stanford.
Was that a tough sell to get him to Palo Alto?
It wasn't. He had just retired. That part wasn't that bad. It was more, I think, selling my mom, because my mom was still working at the time. She was an athletic director in Hawaii. So it was like, okay, how are we going to deal with them doing long distance? So that was one thing. But I think my mom loves him as a coach. He coached her teams when she was playing back in the day. You know, they were married, and he coached them for like 6 seasons at you know, the University of Hawaii. So she knows and is like just as big of an advocate and fan of his as of a coach as I am. So she probably was like, yeah, that's the right move. Go help Spencer out. Go help Stanford out. And then, and then we'll go celebrate when they win.
That's amazing. I imagine that when you were contemplating this job at UC San Diego, I imagine you had some conversations with him about that. And if so, what were those chats like?
Oh, absolutely. I've already had him, come in and like, he was on vacation, just kind of in the area. And I was like, come watch a few practices. And I wanted him to give me feedback and just like, hey, how is practice run? What could we do better? And then he asked a bunch of great questions. Well, okay, why didn't you use the whiteboard? Why didn't you do this? Or what was the goal of this drill? And not in like a you're wrong way. He was genuinely curious. And so that was cool. And I wanted him to like work with my staff and start to get to know us as a unit, because I think there's so much that can be gained from having like a highly functional leadership group. So that was a big part. And then I've already hired him. He's going to come do, he's the best at team building. So in August, when we're in double days, we're going to bring him in for like 5 days, 6 days of, he just does like, I don't know, like team building stuff, you know, all those like silly games that you think like, oh, your partner's blindfolded and you have to, you know, you have to talk to them or, you know, and you got to get around this maze and you have to get them. And then, okay, it's all about the debrief. Okay. Well, what was the point of that? Well, it's communication and how specific can your communication be? And, you know, and it's about trust, right? The person that's blindfolded needs to trust the person who's giving them directions, that they're not going to tell them to walk off the La Jolla, you know, cliffs or something, you know? So that's just kind of a silly example, but he has a plethora of amazing team building activities that, I feel like I'd be stupid to not use him. And so I've already booked him for August 7th to 13th. He's coming.
What is your timeline like now that, spring with the team has ended? What are you as a staff working on to get ready for when they come back in August?
Yeah, great question. Right now I would like my staff to take some personal time. It has been a grind. So we were all kind of hired. Jimmy was hired February 1. Casey was like March 1. Kat was April 1, something like that. And as soon as they were hired, I think they were on the road like the next weekend. So I would like them to take some time for themselves. May is kind of a quiet period recruiting wise. And then June, it gets really crazy. So June, we're out probably 3 out of the 4 weekends. July is crazy because we're running camps, and we're running camps for the first 2 weeks. Almost, you know, I think it's like 12 out of 16 days or something. So And then we'll have a little bit of a break where we'll prep for that August period after camps. We'll prep for August, and then they'll take, you know, a week, 10 days to get away, refresh. The season's long, and we're going to spend more time with each other than we will with our families. And not that that's bad. That's just what the job is. And I want us coming in to the season fresh and hungry and with joy and ready to like lead by example for these young women and how to, and how to lead. And so that's kind of the big picture of the next kind of 2-3 months.
Got it. And as we head towards what will be your first season at the helm, of course, also the program's final in the Big West before moving to the West Coast Conference, how do you approach scheduling with you being a first-time coach? Obviously, a lot of new faces will be on the roster as well, and a lot of new things to learn for your returning players, right? So how do you approach that with the non-conference portion of the schedule?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I went into it not caring at all about RPI. So that I think is kind of like counterintuitive. I went into it thinking, how many WCC teams can we play? And I think I went 3 for 4 of the 4 weekends. We're going to play 3 WCC teams. So I'm really excited about that. That was my main goal. It's like, okay, like, let's try to get some wins. Let's try to play some tough teams. But honestly, we're going to have to win the Big West to go to the tournament. So like for us, like RPI doesn't really matter. So when we enter the WCC, which is a little bit more of a difficult conference, which gets two, sometimes three teams in, you know, a few years ago, there was four, right? So when we enter that conference, can we know some of the teams? Will we have played at some of the gyms already? So it's not a shock. And that's where that was kind of my overarching theme of scheduling for the preseason. So we're playing at St. Mary's, we're playing against LMU, we're playing against Pacific, I believe. Yeah. Anyways, three, maybe four teams. I think maybe there was a fourth in that last tournament, but that's where my head was at because, again, this year is about kind of learning. And so, okay, what can we learn about the WCC? Because that's the future.
That's such an interesting approach. When you look to next season, which again is still months away, but obviously you've spent a lot of time on this, what will you consider a success for the program? If it's not a certain number of wins or a certain place in the standings, how will you say that we had a successful season? What would need to happen?
I mean, I think the easy answer is like, all right, they got 6 wins last year. Let's beat that. Let's get to 10 wins. You know, I think double digit wins is a successful season. Again, trying to keep the bar low, but also not like getting too focused on the wins and losses because we, at the end of the day, you don't really have control over that as, you know, as much as like we'd like to think that we do. You could play a great match and the other team has a European who's an Olympian that you didn't know about. And, you know, playing New Mexico State and like, where did they get that girl? And it's like, well, we have no control over that. Let's just play as hard and as well as we can within our system. And so that's where, the easy answer is like double digit wins, I think would be a success. I think we're going to go through statistically where we were last year in every category. And if we can get better at 3 of those, you know, there's probably 12 categories overall. If we can get better at 3, that would be an improvement. And if we stay the same and maybe not get too worse at the other. And then if, you know, year 2, it's another 3 while keeping that. Then all of a sudden we're 50% better statistically from what we can control. Like those to me are more important than, or more indicative of like a system that is working volleyball wise, of a culture that is functional, you know, on the court and off the court, and of a program that's trending in the right direction. So like, I don't know, if it's like the business world, what do they call it? The KPIs, well, I don't even know what that stands for. The
performance indicators.
Yeah. So if we can get good at our KPIs, obviously I would be terrible in the business world since I can't even come up with that. But I think the themes are the same, right? It's like you can do everything right on a sales pitch and not make the sale. But did you, control everything that you could control? And so that's where we're at, I think. And that's where I've got to remind myself and my staff, like, hey, this is process. Hey, did we lose the match? Yeah, but was our hitting percentage higher? Was our blocks per set higher? Was our service aces higher? Like where can we get better? Or where are we falling behind from years past or from like Big West champions, you know? So we've already done the deep dive on, the final 4 teams from last year, the conference champions and of the Big West from years before and what marks we need to hit in order to get to that level.
Well, Spencer, thank you so much for the time and we'll all be cheering for you. Best of luck. We'll see you soon at Liontree.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, we can't wait. And man, this podcast was fun. This is my first one. Let's do it again.
Really enjoyed getting to know Spencer and look forward to seeing the Tritons on the court beginning in August. The full 2026 UC San Diego schedule will be announced in the coming weeks. Well, thanks for listening to TritonCast this week. Don't forget, you can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms by searching TritonCast wherever you get your pods.
And a reminder, you can listen to any of our 128 episodes anytime on demand. Just visit ucsdtritons.com/podcasts. And be sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcasting platform so you don't miss a moment. New episodes of TritonCast premiere on Wednesdays. For more on TritonCast, follow us on X at TritonCast. And if you have a suggestion for a future guest, send us a tweet or email us at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.